This is the November 5 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Sherman Newland of Risk Management Commodities out of Hudsonville, Illinois, Jackie Vakes of Total Farm Marketing in Hollister, Missouri, and Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting from Waco, Texas. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find it online, listen to it on demand anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org. Just click and play right there from the website or scroll all the way to the bottom and you'll find some of your favorite podcast applications like Stitcher and SoundCloud, Spotify, Apple Podcast, and Google Podcast too. Click and play on those, and they'll probably pop up those applications right there on your phone or tablet if you happen to have them installed. Let's get started for the day. I'd like to get a list of items to take up. Sherman Newland, do you have anything you want to discuss today?
I don't know. I mean, that the producers have been patient this summer and fall. I think they've been doing a lot of selling. Exciting market for them, so you know, what do we do from here? And I got guys already talking about stuff for next year, so I think that's in the mix and they're thinking as well.
Jackie Vakes from Total Farm Marketing.
I think we definitely should touch on South America and the potential impact. You know, I think we're trading quite a bit of that.
And Dan Zwicker.
Oh, I really don't have a lot to add. I suppose you have to probably take a look at the dollar weakness. We're seeing a lot of weakness in the dollar. I think that's a key driving force for commodities and physical assets. And I guess we'll have to see, you know, what's the total impact of the election. Right now, I think the election is kind of trading a split government, but I'm not sure that's a sure deal. It looks like Georgia senators may end up in a runoff in January, and then that'll determine whether or not we'll have a divided government or not, or we'll have all one-party government. So I think that's still tricky yet as we go down the road and could come in and impact this market.
I'd like to start with next week's Tuesday. Crop production and WASD reports. Any reason, Jackie Vakes, to think that there will be adjustments either in the crop production report or in WASD?
Well, I think that there are a lot of people that are banking on the fact that they're going to drop corn yield because of Iowa damage. You know, when you look at the average guesses dropping to 177.5 from 178.4, and beans are just dropping 0.2%, or 0.2 of a bushel, excuse me, 51.7 from 51.9. You know, that's the wild card in this particular report, Todd, as far as I'm concerned, because, you know, we've got a lot of guys out in Iowa that all of a sudden found out that they had 40 bushel to the acre more than what they thought they were going to have, and they were in drought areas and everything else. So I don't know if that's a justifiable guess that they've got, but it's there, you know, and so everything follows right along with it in terms of ending stocks.
So something to think about as we head into next week's USD report. That's on Tuesday. Of course, it'll be released at 11 o'clock Central Time. You can see those numbers on our website at willag.org. Sherman Newland, have you been thinking about those numbers as well?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I think the trade's going to, you know, definitely pay attention to them. If there's some sort of surprise one way or the other from the, you know, average trade guesses. But, you know, I don't know. If anything, I think maybe beans could be a little bit lower overall, and corn maybe a touch better, or about right in line with trade guesses. I know locally beans were just average, you know, so to speak, nothing outstanding. There wasn't a whole lot of rain in August in a lot of places, and that definitely, you know, cut back the yield for guys. But from what I'm hearing from clients and other farmers is beans are just average, but corn was pretty decent. Decent to really, really good. So I think, you know, a little bit of, you know, beans a little bit lower and corn maybe about in line with trade guesses.
Dan, can you lay out the technical picture? Let's do it one commodity at a time. And I think we'll start with soybeans from you. Then we'll ask a few other questions of the other panelists along the way.
I think overall the markets are still completing or in the early stages of the third wave of three out of their August low that we had in this marketplace. The correction, the way I count it last week, was just the completion of the first or the second phase up, and now we are beginning the second phase up. That should take us to a fairly decent high, one that's going to probably maybe stick around for a while, because then we'll go into a three-wave corrective measure, and I would look for that to kind of take us down into what I would call as a late winter, early spring low, and then we would then regroup and probably assess, you know, how by then we'll be probably maybe into the March stocks report, plantings report. We'll be halfway through the marketing year. We'll have an assessment of what kind of usage we have. We'll have a much better, firmer handle on what supply is after you go through a couple stocks reports. Just like this November report probably isn't going to do a whole lot. There'll be some minor changes maybe, but the stocks report that'll be released, that'll be surveyed December 1st, that'll be released in January, we'll have the most thing. As far as the technical side, I've got the corn chart in front of me, so let's start with the corn chart. And I guess the first technical objective that I would have for the lead futures option would be to, if we can push on up through the most recent high here and clear it with some high volume trade, I think we would go right on up into the 440, 450 area as the first technical target. And then we'll take steps from there. We take a look at the January soybeans, basically since the November soybean is in expiration. I would take a look at the January soybeans, and I would begin to talk about probably something up around 1150 as a target here. Beans have a tendency to move in 50-cent pieces, and it looks like we've cleared this $11 mark. So 11.50, and then we start talking about $12 soybeans. And again, I would view this as the third wave of three that's going to take us on up into a high that could probably stick around for a while before we go into a corrective mode that would take us into, you know, a winter spring type low.
Yeah, so I was going to ask you that, whether, because some of this is demand driven and some of this seems to be weather driven, whether it would last for very long, but you're going to, I assume, have it last through close to the end of the year. Is that correct?
It could. I mean, timing is difficult on the thing. I think we're good at least through the month of November. December kind of gets a little tricky because you get into holiday trade, and then you get into, since so much of our trading nowadays is driven by hedge funds, you get into, you know, profit taking, positioning for quarterly reports, yearly reports, and this kind of stuff. So we get into choppy trading. I've always, my experience of watching the markets and trading the markets is once December 1st comes, just get out of the market, because the market does a lot of moves that just doesn't make any sense technically or fundamentally. So you just get out of it, take a whole month vacation for the month of December. Then after the first of the year, you get back serious again. Because then the first thing the trade will be focusing on then will be the final crop report. And then we'll start looking ahead, because the final crop report usually puts the final nail in the coffin of last year's production. Whether it's right or wrong, it's in the books, and the market then looks forward to the next growing season.
I don't disagree at all with what Dan's saying. In fact, I think that we're riding the tide of the dryness in South America, the delayed planting, the implications that that has for them to be able to supply beans to China. And, you know, as we get further into the season now, and they've got the stuff in the ground, basically we'll start to get more reports. And if we get reports that things are going well down there and it looks as if their production is going to be the same, some of this, you know, some of the momentum here will slow down. And you couldn't be more right about December, Dan. What a confusing month that can be, because you just have so many things that are going on. And the trade itself, you know, with the black boxes being back in the market, it makes a big difference, too. We've seen the increase in the volatility. And I just think that in general, I don't know. It's going to take something great. In other words, China's going to have to continue. I know that they have the trade agreement and everything else, and this goes back to the election, and whether or not they will continue to do what they're doing beyond, let's say, what they consider to be their needs. You know, you look at the projections for next year that came out of the USDA out of Beijing, you know, and they're saying that the imports for beans are going to be lower for next year. And not surprising, because, I mean, they hammered this year just because of the problems that they've had with the U.S., you know, because of COVID. And their hog herd is growing. That's the one thing that's really, really good. But, you know, it's going to be a very interesting circumstance. You know, I think part of the market's being driven at the moment, too, Todd, by the fact that we sold one of our first cargoes of soybean oil to India in a long, long time. And I think that kind of cemented with the market that there are definitely problems in Malaysia, and they're concerned about palm oil production. You know, palm oil is used for salad dressing, and if it's not available, bean oil is used. And bean oil is a big thing for China. We know that. You know, that's one of their number one staples. So I think that's driving the market. And the idea that Brazil dropped their tariffs on both corn and beans, I think the market is saying, oh, hey, this is good. You know, this means we're going to export beans to them. And there are rumors one cargo was already secured. But I'll tell you what, I've been down there and talked to Dr. Cordonier, too, and he said, it's a nightmare. You know, they're not set up for taking things in. They're set up for shipping things out. And so to be able to reverse that could be a really big deal. So we'll have to see.
Sherman Newland on soybeans producers, I think, have been selling into this rally pretty heavily. Many of them probably thinking they sold far too early. I'm wondering if there is anything you and Risk Management Commodities are advising that they do now.
Yeah, I mean, I think guys have some selling remorse from early on. There's no doubt about that. I mean, you know, when you started getting above $9, guys started, you know, trickling out sales. And, you know, and as these markets have come up, right, as we get into harvest, they've definitely been selling stuff off the combine to get their average prices higher. And I can't blame them a bit. I think a lot of some guys have held on to some, you know, just see if we could go to that $11 or even the $12 mark. I would look, you know, if, you know, I agree with what the Jackie and Dan are saying. I mean, there are certain things that have to come about for the bean market to go higher. But the last 2 days sure has broken out, you know, to the upside on the charts. You know, we need some, you know, dry weather to stay in South America. We need China to continue to buy beans or bean oil or, you know, I agree with what Jackie's saying. Bean oil had a heck of a day today. The demand for bean oil seems to be really strong right now. I think there are certain things out there that can push this market higher. And if guys have sold out or want to get back into the market, we would suggest, you know, looking at some calls or reowning it on paper one way or the other, just in case we can get to that $12 mark, which, you know, if we have to start to ration beans because of the demand or they lower, you know, yield a little bit here and you get to carry out to 200. I've even seen some outfits saying carry out can end up being closer to 140 on beans. So if we get anything close to that, I think, you know, yeah, we could have $12 beans. So If guys want to come back in and re-own some of that, I don't have a problem with that. Using some calls or some call spreads or however, you know, there's many ways of doing it. But I think if the farmers are willing to do it, I think there is some potential there.
I think you really hit on a good point, Sherman, from the standpoint that I've got a lot of guys right now, 85% sold on beans, sitting on the last 15% to see once where things are going. That could keep us at a higher level because they're just going to sit on those. They're not going to go anywhere, as well as the fact that the commercial now has control over, a big control over the crop in a lot of places. And so, you know, that always supports price too.
What's interesting is basis is starting to even get tighter. I mean, for us anyway, around here locally, basis for corn and beans has been very, very stout. And I've even heard of 10 over up in the upper parts of Indiana today for corn now. And now that's, you know, that's telling you something.
Yeah. If you go into the western states, Kansas, Nebraska, some of those places are selling corn at 10 to 19 over picked up on a farm in your big cattle areas. And so that's shocking. That's not something they ever see out there. So you know that there's something going on. A lot of concern about whether they're going to have enough or not.
Well, something going on, but I'm wondering, corn does not seem to have been keeping pace with the soybean market over the last month or so. I'm wondering if you're concerned about that at all, Sherman.
A little bit. I mean... It is, you know, we kind of went up to that 420 level and sold off. And in the day, we got up to, 417 and a half, something like that, and then sold off. That is, you know, a little concerning. The carryout for corn right now isn't, you know, in jeopardy, so to speak. Even if they lower it to 2 billion or so, I mean, you're not going to run out of corn. I think the things we've been hearing about China, whether or not they're going to import, you know, another 10 million metric ton, I've heard stories up to 22 million metric ton total. Now, whether that comes to fruition or not, we'll have to wait and see. But if something like that would happen, you know, and then you could lower yield a little bit, in these upcoming reports in corn, if that would happen. I think, you know, you could get the corn market to get excited again. But, if beans are going to go higher, you know, like Dan's suggesting, 1150 or maybe we even get to 12, you know, corn's not going to sit there. It's going to have to play along and come and be drug up whether it wants to or not.
Yeah, I wanted to make a comment, and we talked a little bit about this on the Thursday afternoon program, is the grain is in elevator hands. For the most part, now, you know, farmers still have some inventory, and I don't know what the grain stocks report will actually say, but that's way down the road here. But I think the end users, many of them have screwed up. They've been trying to transition into buying grain directly from the farmer rather than owning elevators and building elevator storage and accumulating inventory for themselves. And I think what you've and the ethanol industry really never did build extra storage. I mean, the most storage that they have is for a day or two. You know, they never did operate like an elevator, buy a lot of inventory on hand so they could keep feeding into a plant. So the small local ethanol plants, they have to rely on a steady flow of grain coming in from farmers, or they got to have it coming in from an elevator, or they got to have it coming in through a rail system of some kind. And I'm not too sure. I think this basis improvement is going to get a lot stronger. I think you're going to see some phenomenal basis. And I think it's because the end users... and I'm going to put the processors in that. I'm going to put the ethanol people in that. I'm going to put the livestock feeders in that. Just about anybody that actually uses the grain and does something with it other than store it. I don't think those guys have the coverage coming out of this harvest that they should have in their back pocket. And then that puts them in a position now that they have to go out into the country, and the people that own the grain are a lot of co-op elevators, some private elevators, a lot of farmers have built elevators themselves nowadays. So in order to get that cash grain now, into the pipeline, they're going to have to come out with some pretty strong basis levels. And that is, at least that's going to happen in the Eastern Corn Belt. I'm not really versed on the Western Corn Belt a lot, especially the Northwestern Corn Belt. Todd, you know more about that because you're up there half the time. But that's a new phenomenon in my career as the Northwestern Corn Belt. But I do think the Eastern Corn Belt, uses the river systems for export demand. You got the Illinois River, Mississippi River, you know, and then you got the rails going into the feedlots into Texas. I just don't think a lot of the end users, I think they were sleeping at the wheel, or they got a bunch of new young guys that don't know how the market works. Didn't think they need to have the coverage for one reason or the other because of the supply demand tables implied that we had plenty of corn in inventory. And at least talking to farmers, I think this corn yield's got a ways to come down yet. I don't think it's anywhere close to what USDA has. Now, the bean yield probably is okay. Just about everybody I talk to is happy with their beans. The corn is very, especially corn on corn, really fell off hard this year. So I'm not too sure the corn supply is as large as what USDA has on the books. And we found out that the old crop supply wasn't as large on the books either. And I think this is what caught end users. I think end users are caught short. And I don't know they have a way out of this thing, other than just week by week and try to bid up the, you know, get cash basis levels enough to pull in enough inventory and just hope like the Dickens that something gives, that they don't have to go crazy and bid out of sight.
I would say just on the way the system works, it's about the end user and and what it requires from the system. So livestock and ethanol plants required a distributed storage system, which is what they have in the western part of the Corn Belt. And in the eastern Corn Belt, a much more efficient way to move grain into by rail and the river. And so it needed to be a little larger. I think that roughly explains the two sides of the Corn Belt as it relates to corn and how it's used and stored. But it does make a lot of sense, and your discussion makes a great deal of sense, too. Jackie, you wanted to follow up from him.
Well, I was just going to say, everything that Dan said, I can't agree with one point on what he said. The big thing out in the West when it comes to the feedlots is, see, their typical year is, you know, they will lock in with someone so many bushels, let's say 400,000 bushels of corn. And then at harvest time, which is normally one of our lower times, is when they're going to start to do pricing and things like that. And that's why I think they're in big trouble. Because, and the farmer, you know, let's roll back to when we were in the $3 and 30 and 40 cent range. Farmers were reluctant sellers. They were not going to sell. They didn't care. They were just going to sit back. And so I think you're real right, because the end user at the moment just doesn't know what to do. And then when you take a look at the fact that the hog herd in China is getting bigger, the China demand, you know, nobody felt confident that China was going to follow through on what they were supposed to do. And it seems like it's coming about. So this is a very different position that we're in. In all the years I've been in, this is one of the oddest harvest seasons I've ever seen, to be honest with you. And so I expect that we're going to continue to see fireworks as we go forward for a while.
Well, Sherman, I want to follow up with you with your farmer hat on to some extent. Do you ship directly to a river from where you are?
We do haul corn or beans, sometimes corn down to the Evansville, down to the river down there. Otherwise, most of our corn goes directly to the ethanol plant.
So given the discussion we've had and I maybe some of the explanation I did, I was thinking about last year, and I've asked a couple of elevator operators whether this is the case or the not, that because corn exports last year lagged, the normal basis that we would see in our part of the world by comparison to other areas, the Western Corn Belt in particular, was not as strong. And I suspect that what we'll see is that will maybe flip if the export market is really there for corn this year. Is that how you viewed last year? Am I on a right track with that, do you think?
Yeah, the basis last year never did get really good. I mean, we definitely have a lot better basis. And, you know, like Jackie was saying, it's been a weird year. I mean, having a rally like this in harvest and even see the basis continue to get tighter, it's telling, you know, that they need corn and they need it, you know, now. I mean, we've been mentioning, you know, all fall amongst ourselves. I mean, the other farmers and clients, and there's really no line at the elevator. There's no line at the ethanol plant. Mm-hmm. Usually, you know, that's kind of odd. I mean, guys, my truck's been able to get in and get right out most of the time. It's been kind of strange, actually, you know, for, you know, supposed to be having such a great crop. Which, you know, locally, we are locally having a pretty decent corn crop, but there's still no lines. Now the elevators have starting some ground piles and whatnot, but harvest is getting pretty well wrapped up around here, with that being said.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you hit it as far as when you look at the carry in the market, you know, the carry in the market definitely on the bean market is saying, well, you know, Here's still the time to sell. We have no carry in that bean market whatsoever. And then you look into the corn market and there's a small amount of carry, but not much. You know, it does go all the way out to July. You know, there's only 4 cents between March and July. Everything seems to be in the front months. And, you know, you talked earlier about, Todd, about corn not keeping up. I think some of that is that it's on the end of spreading. You know, you're seeing beans being bought, corn being sold. And I think that, you know, we see that often, that or wheat, one or the other. But corn has been the one of choice lately.
Anything that we haven't taken up that we should? You wanted to talk about the dollar, actually, Dan, and what it means to the marketplace. So why don't you give me your view on the weakness in the dollar?
Well, I think it's reflecting heavy government deficit spending, which has been going on for years and years, but it seems to be accelerating at a little faster pace. And then, of course, this coronavirus situation has made it worse, where we had a big stimulus program last spring, and for the most part, all of your local taxing body units, whether it's the city, the township, or the state, the slowdown, the shutdown, economic shutdown in many areas has blown just nuclear holes through budgets throughout the country. So I think... knowing politicians as I do, they're just going to basically print money. And I think what we're going to experience is extreme currency devaluation because of this printing of money. And now in the 70s that we grew up in, when we were much younger, inflation was kind of generated by the guns and butter policy of the 60s. And then, you know, we had wage and price controls for a couple of years, which created shortages all the more. And then we had the Arab oil embargo, which shot energy prices sharply higher. And, you know, we were off to the races and we had an inflationary market there through most of the 70s until the high interest rates slowed it down. Well, we're to the point now that high interest rates would totally choke the economy. I mean, if we would have interest rates today like what we had when we bought our first houses or when we first bought our car out of college, this economy would be in the mud. I mean, it would just totally roll over and die because we've kind of grown addicted to 0% interest rates. And the only way you can take interest rates higher at this point, you've got to print more money first. So you're going you got to have an inflationary type market, currency devaluation, and then maybe you can maybe bring interest rates back higher again. But you can't bring interest rates back higher until you devalue more. So whether or not you want to call the word inflation or currency devaluation, it is just going to take more money to buy physical assets. And I think that's what we're seeing. And I don't know what the housing market is up Midwest, but I know here in the Sun Belt states, it is just absolutely off the charts. Everybody's bidding above asking price. You got multiple offers above asking price. It's actually bidding houses out of price ranges for a lot of young couples. They can't even buy a house anymore. And land prices in Texas, where I'm at, which is I call totally junk compared to what we have up in the Corn Belt that'll raise 250 to 260 bushel of corn. It's all going for $15,000, $20,000 an acre, and it won't grow any. It barely grows grass.
Why would anybody say that, Dan?
They all want 5 acres or 10 acres, and they want to build a ranch house on it.
Okay. That's what I was wondering, if it was related to the housing market.
And then Texas is, I don't know, 180,000 people a month is moving into Texas. We can't build roads fast enough. We can't build houses fast enough. Yeah. We can't build anything fast enough. So it's really getting expensive to live in Texas. The income tax is nice, but by having housing shortages and everything is bidding up the prices of houses. And of course, you know what goes on with a high house prices, real estate taxes then go up. Yeah. So everybody's got real estate sticker shock, how much their house has gone up over the past 4 years or so. So I don't know. This economy is, I guess I'm getting too old for it. But it is, it is terribly wild down here. I don't know what's going on in the Midwest. I think I heard farmland prices are still going for $14,000. And either commodity prices are going to have to go higher to pay for that, or inflation is going to have to pay for it. Currency devaluation will pay for it.
We've got exactly the same circumstance in Missouri, Dan. I know someone who put their house up for sale on a Friday morning at 10 o'clock. And by 2 o'clock in the afternoon, they had 7 offers and it was sold. And it's ridiculous. I mean, they can't build fast enough. We've got people here from California. The migration from the West has just been unbelievable. And so, you know, when you talk about the dollar, I'm going to just tag on to what you were saying. The dollar determines what the South American farmer gets paid, because he's paid in U.S. dollars. And one of the things that's been to his advantage is that we have been stronger than the real. And so, you know, if the dollar continues to trade sideways or trade lower, and we're just above major support, major support's 92.06, next level after that is 87.81, that we won't get hurt as much by the South American situation as we have been, because, you know, they've just really had a tremendous opportunity down there to be able to take advantage of this exchange rate and hang on to their grain to try and hedge their inflation and everything else. Mato Grosso, the spot price for beans is 13 and a quarter a bushel compared to last year at 620. Can you imagine? And so, corn prices are high too. So this might give us an opportunity and another reason to say that we've got a chance to continue to see strong prices.
Let's get a final word from each of you now. I think Sherman Newland from Risk Management Commodities out of Hudsonville, Illinois. I'll start with you today.
I think, you know, producers can sit back and be happy that markets have rallied. I know a lot on their minds about what to do about next year, whether to switch to corn or beans, you know, to corn. I don't think the bean market yet has rallied enough to buy acres for away from some of the corn guys, but it'll be interesting to see. But guys are thinking about it. I think that's on their to-do list. Of course, you know, everybody's having to order seed now, so they're, you know, really looking at that hard. And I've had some comments from some farmers that they will plant some more beans. But overall, I don't think we've rallied quite enough to do it. You know, markets have come up. I think we still have some upside potential. And if they want to participate, I think, you know, getting back into the market with some call options or some known risk strategies is probably not the worst idea in the world.
Dan Zwicker, it's Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Your final word for the day?
My final word of the day is we're ending the year near yearly highs or in yearly highs. And if that follows through into the first part of next year, the odds are fairly high that we could see the best prices of the 21 calendar year in the first 3 months of the year.
Yep.
So one needs to be looking over his shoulder on new crop pricing or some form of new crop price protection on the downside. If this market continues higher, let's say it goes into the January crop report for one reason or the other, the odds are going to be pretty high that we could be having the calendar year high in the first 3 months of the year and just about do opposite of what we did last year.
And Jackie Vakes from Total Farm Marketing out of Hollister, Missouri.
When you look at the big picture, everybody is bullish as all get out right now. And I think we have to take the bull hat and set it to the side and just look at what our individual business is doing and what makes sense for us. And in other words, you know, if you've got beans and you're storing them, you've got to really take a look at possibly selling. And I'm with Sherm, you know, you can re-own them in a moment. It doesn't take much time, but you just don't know what's going to happen. And the likelihood of us, and I'm going to back you up 100%, Dan, on us hitting possibly the highest highs as we get into those first 3 months of the year, is because a lot of this has been driven by what's been going on in South America. And by that time, we're going to know what's happening. So, you know, just don't get caught up in the euphoric attitude that we have at this point in time. Just be level-headed, be business-like, and care about what you're doing, not what somebody else is doing.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find and listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like off our website, the address there, WILLAG.org. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Sherman Newland, Jackie Vakes, and Dan Zwicker. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.